You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, in just 3 days, more than 10,000 elite athletes from around the world will descend on Paris for the 2024 Summer Olympic Games. Canada is sending hundreds of athletes to compete, and one got her start in South Hazelton. Steeplechaser Regan Yee will be entering her second Olympic Games this Friday, and we have an exclusive interview with her about her humble beginnings in South Hazelton, how she made it this far on the world stage, and what it's going to take to bring home a medal. But first, over the past week, the wildfire situation in BC has exploded, with hotter, drier conditions creating more challenges for the BC Wildfire Service. Crews have been dispatched across the province to keep the fires at bay. Currently, there are more than 360 fires burning in BC, 11 of which are in the Northwest Fire Center area, and 6 of those have been deemed out of control. To get an update on the wildfire situation in the Northwest Fire Center region, we check in with Fire Information Officer Caitlin Bailey in Smithers. Stay with us.
I'm Caitlin Bailey. I'm currently the information officer at the Northwest Fire Center based here in Smithers.
Great, Caitlin. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News. Of course, we are in July now, late July, and we're right back into the fire season. There's a number of fires burning right now in the Northwest Fire Center. Could you give us a quick overview and update as to what is the situation right now in the Northwest Fire Center area?
Sure, Dan. So we currently have 10 active fires within the Northwest Fire Center. 6 of those are considered out of control, 1 is being held, and 3 of those are under control. And within the last 7 days, we've had 16 new fires. So of those, of a total of 43 throughout the season so far, 16 of those have been within the last week.
I guess that's due to the, weather situation. It's gotten very dry. There's not so much rain going on. Could you tell us where exactly some of these out of control fires are?
Yeah, absolutely. So last Friday, July 19th, as you're saying, conditions have been dry and fairly hot. And then last Friday, there was significant lightning sort of across the center. And a lot of those new fires are in the southern eastern part of the fire center. So in the Nandina fire zone largely, as well as a couple in the other fire zones. But between Friday, July 19th and Saturday, July 20th, we got 13 new fires in the center, largely from that lightning.
And what does that do with to the equipment and personnel that you have in the area on standby? Where are things at right now? What is in the field, and what kind of crews do you have in the field?
Right now, we have initial attack crews positioned within each of our southern zones, which includes the Skeena zone, the Bulky zone, and the Nandina zone. And as this afternoon, we're expecting more lightning, or the potential for more lightning. Some of those zones, so the ones in the Nandina and Bulky zone, are on what we call immediate dispatch. So this means that that crew is sitting with a helicopter waiting to respond to a fire as soon as it's reported. We also have a unit crew within the center who will be able to respond to more sustained action fires. So that's any sort of fire that may be spread beyond that initial attack capability. And we also have contract crews that we can utilize and heavy equipment on standby, so things like bulldozers and water tenders.
I know we've been asked quite a bit about, you know, crews that they see around town, you know, the Telka and Smithers area, Houston as well. And folks are wondering what needs to happen for these crews to be deployed to a particular fire. You know, looking at the app, the BC Wildfire app, you know, 3 of the, I guess, kind of larger size fires in the region are south of Utsa Lake. It's obviously a pretty remote part of the Northwest Fire Center area. Do you go after those? What needs to happen for crews to be dispatched to go fight a particular fire?
So our sort of overarching priority is initial attack of new fires, especially ones that are close to communities or threatening our priorities. So maybe it's maybe I can lay out sort of our top priority. So our top priority is always human life and safety. Second priority is property. Third priority is protection of areas with high environmental values, things like community watersheds, habitat for species at risk, things like that. And then the fourth is resource values. So it really depends on how many resources we have available at the time as to whether or not we go after a fire, as well as whether it's threatening any of those priorities.
And at the moment, I know you kind of mentioned it there, which crews have actually been dispatched to fight fires in the region?
We do have a unit crew that has been actioning. They were actioning the Little Oliver Creek fire for quite a while. That's within the FEMA zone. And then they were actioning one of the fires on that you referred to south of Utsa Lake there in Tweedsmuir Provincial Park, R11239. There was a unit crew there actioning that. We also have had initial attack crews on a lot of those new fires that I've mentioned earlier. How I said we had 13 new fires on Friday and Saturday. And so a lot of our initial attack crews actioned those, and we were able to call 7 of those fires out with another one under control by today.
I know that, you know, we're just right now at the middle of the summer, so to speak, late July. What is the Northwest Fire Center preparing for? What other resources will be available to deal with any fires that come to the area?
As I said before, we do have the initial attack crews positioned right now in case anything comes up today here. We've been experiencing really hot weather with some record-breaking temperatures even over the past week. But cooler weather is in the forecast starting tomorrow for a couple of days, so that'll give a bit of a reprieve here. There is some lightning, like I said, in the forecast today, so we'll be monitoring that and conducting air patrols as needed to look for new fires there.
I guess one other thing that comes to mind, you know, every year this seems to be the case. A lot of fires take place in that, you know, Nedina, Nechaco Plateau area, and it kind of crosses both the Northwest Fire Center and the Prince George Fire Center. How do you kind of coordinate with other fire center areas when you have those types of fires that are very close to each other and that border area between the two different zones?
Certainly at the zone level, they're always in contact if there's anything that's threatening either of the different centers or anything that will be of impact there. But there haven't been too many issues this year with that.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Caitlin, thanks so much for giving us your time today. And of course, we'll stay in touch as this fire season continues to progress.
No, I think that's great. Thanks so much, Dan.
That was Fire Information Officer Caitlin Bailey in Smithers. Coming up next, my conversation with Olympic steeplechaser Regan Yee.
My name is Regan Yee. I am from South Hazleton, British Columbia. I currently train with Mission Run Dark Sky, which is an Under Armour sponsored professional running group. And we are in St. Moritz in Switzerland right now, getting ready for the Paris Olympics.
Great, Regan. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News. This is a pretty big deal. This is your second time going to the Olympics. You were there in Tokyo in 2020. What are you doing right now to get prepared in the last couple of weeks before you head to Paris for the 2024 Summer Olympics?
So right now we are doing some altitude training. So we're at 6,000 feet here up in the Swiss Alps. We'll do this for a few weeks just to get the red blood cell boost from training in like an oxygen deprived state. I'm up here with Team Canada, but my professional running team is here as well, because we have 6 or 7 of us from my team that qualified from different countries for the Olympics this year, which is pretty exciting. And then closer to the Olympics, we'll go down to Barcelona and do a heat adaptation camp, just because historically Paris has been quite hot that time of year. So for any of the distance events, you kind of want to be prepared for that heat as well. So go down, do some heat acclimation, and then I leave for the Olympic Village on August 1st, spend a few nights there, and then I have my my prelims, the first round of the steeplechase.
Regan, I guess tell us a little bit about Steeplechase. I know, you know, I've been talking about you and about some of this in the last couple of days, and some folks were like, well, what is Steeplechase? And so I'm having to explain it. So for some of our listeners who don't know what Steeplechase is, what is it, and what do you do in the Steeplechase, and what is your event?
Yeah, okay. So the Steeplechase is a 3,000 meter race around the track, so 7.5 laps. You have 5 barriers, so they're like big, sturdy hurdles that are equally spaced around the track. And then one of those also has a water pit after it. So you jump over the hurdle into the water pit and keep going. So there's 35 barriers in total over 3 kilometers. A lot of people think I'm in like a horse jumping event when they hear Steeplechase. And that is how the event originated. Like it was farmers or people riding their horses, jumping over ditches and fences. And I guess they just decided, like, why don't people do it? So, yep, that's the event that I do. It's kind of crazy. I honestly had no idea what it was the first time I jumped into a steeplechase race. My high school coach, we are at our zone track meet in Smithers, at Smithers Secondary School. And he's like, there's no one else in the race. Just hop in, like you'll win because you're the only one in your age group. So like, just give it a go. And I did it. And I was like, wow, this is actually a really fun race. Like you get to jump over things. There's like a water pit. Like it's just exciting. Stuck with that. And eventually, got better and better at it. Moved up from the provincial level to the national level to the international level. All the way to the Olympics, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's quite a feat. You know, Hazelton has produced a couple of Olympians, including yourself, over the years. What is it about training in a small town and kind of getting that feel? Obviously, this is completely different than, you know, NCAA level or some of your Pan Am championship appearances, world championships as well. So how do you go from, you know, starting off in South Hazelton, going to those, you know, regional provincial meets in Smithers and in British Columbia to where you are now?
It's been a really crazy journey actually looking back on it, but honestly, every step was just like a small natural progression. Like I never made any crazy jumps in my career. It was always just getting a little bit better at a time and moving up to that next level. So that's starting at the zone championships in Smithers, the next year going to the provincial championships, like placing higher and higher until I was making provincial teams. I think coming from a small town, like you have the support of your whole community behind you. Like a lot of people ask if I feel like it's a disadvantage that I didn't go to like a fancy high school in the Lower Mainland or something like that, because I mean, we didn't even have like a track in Hazelton. We don't have hurdles. We have snow on the ground for 5 months of the year sometimes. So you can't really train in that. But honestly, like I think it's been like super helpful for my career. I've been able to have patience in my career and have the time to make those steps. I think a lot of times, if you're from like a busier city center, there's a lot more competition around you, a lot more pressure, and you end up overtraining at a young age. For me, I got to play basketball. I got to play soccer. I got to play volleyball. And running was just something that was mixed in there. And eventually, I was not really coordinated enough for those other sports. And running became like my main focus by grade 12. I think there's something to be said for being like taken away from all the pressures of like elite sport and being allowed to like ease into it. I think it was really helpful for me.
Regan, one of the other things you mentioned was, and obviously we see it in your presence on social media and such, and this is kind of a new thing for athletes, having to, you know, have a personality, be out there. You're sponsored, as you mentioned, by Under Armour. Tell me a little bit about that. Kind of what is you know, required, and what do you have to do to make sure that you're out there, not only training, but also you're representing Canada coming up in a couple of weeks. So what do you have to do to kind of athletes are asked to do a lot of this now, social media, interviews, be kind of a presence. So what is kind of happening aside from your physical training, getting ready for these competitions? What else are you doing?
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's a lot of social media interviews, podcasts like this, because when a brand sponsors you, they want you to be, yeah, out in the public eye. They want you to be representing their brand well. And that's the same as being selected for Team Canada or other grants or sponsorships. They want to have, someone who is like a face in the community, someone who's giving back, someone who is, outspoken and positive. So public speaking does not come naturally to me at all. A lot of preparation goes into any like speech that I do. And sometimes the preparation just goes out the window anyways, because I get up there and I'm like so, so nervous. So I've had to practice that a lot. There's like a mental side to it as well, because yeah, you're in the public eye. You have to have a public social media account. Like, it can't be private. So it's like part of your contract with Under Armour. Anytime they ask you to come do a photo shoot or an ad or something like that, like, yeah, you have to be ready to do that. So that's definitely something that I didn't really think about, before becoming a professional athlete. And it just like running, like you have to practice it and you get used to it. And it's like a skill that you can learn and practice. Other things other than just training that you have to do that come along with being a paid professional runner.
Just wanted to take a look at some of more of the athletic ends of your career. Of course, you made an appearance at the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, and you ran a Canadian record of a 9.27 for the 300-meter steeplechase. It was a Canadian best. You qualified for the Olympics then, and placed 30th in the steeplechase. You also, when you're in your school days at Western, I see that you set the individual track and field record, the best individual track and field record out of anyone in the school's history. So these are some pretty great, you know, stats. What are you kind of hoping to accomplish this time going to Paris?
This year, I feel like I put a lot of pressure on myself going into Tokyo. I feel like at your first Olympics, you kind of want to prove yourself. I just signed a professional contract. So it was my first time representing like Under Armour as a brand at a major games like that. I think I maybe burnt myself out a little bit. Like you can expend too much emotional energy. And even if you're physically ready to go, your mind has to be in it as well. Like that's such a big part of racing and competing in track and field. This year the lead up was a lot different. Obviously Tokyo was like a COVID Olympics. And so the lead up into it was super intense because we couldn't leave the country, without having to quarantine upon arrival, like back into Canada. So that year we had to wait until like the last month of qualification. And that's when all the Canadian races were. So we had three races in 1 month, and that was like the only time we could do it. Each race had to be like no mistakes. Obviously that third and final race was 3 hours before the Olympic window closed. And I executed perfectly, got a Canadian record, a PB, ran the Olympic standard. So it was just a very intense lead up going into the Olympics. Whereas this year, I've kind of known for a while that I was in a good qualifying spot. I started racing back in April. I went to some Diamond League races in China and ran well enough there to score high enough in the world rankings that I was like fairly secure. I've been able to expend a lot less like emotional energy into this buildup. And I can just focus on peaking at the right time when I need to, in Paris. So yeah, this year, I don't have that same like personal pressure that I'm putting on myself. And I also feel like I've been able to prepare a little more smoothly. So I do have high expectations for this race because I know I can perform well. And the goal will be to make the final. They've changed how you make the final now. So there used to be some qualifying spots where you could advance out of your heat based on time, whereas this year you just have to be top five in your heat and then you'll make the final. So yeah, that's going to be my goal, is to come top five.
Just the last couple of things for you, Regan. Most of the athletes that go to the Olympics are, you know, competing at a very high physical level. But what sets them, you know, usually apart is the mental capacity, the mental preparedness. What are you doing kind of, as you mentioned, the hours and the minutes leading up to the start of your races?
I mean, it even starts like the month before, like even now at this training camp, I'm starting like my visualization stuff. I'm like thinking about my race plan. I'm thinking about just staying relaxed and focused. But yeah, hours and days leading into it, like physically you've done all the work that you can. We just say like the hay is in the barn. Like now it's just relaxing and getting ready to execute on race day. And so a lot of that is just minimizing stress as much as possible. Sticking to your routines that you know work. And yeah, just kind of soaking it all in without overwhelming yourself, which can be pretty hard. Like last year I tried to do that at the Olympic Village and it like, yeah, I was unsuccessful because it was just, there's so much going on. There's a lot of stress. It was also, like I said, COVID during that time. So, there was just the added like COVID tests in the morning and you're eating your meals in like a little plastic cubicle and you're not interacting with athletes from other teams. So yeah, this year, I think a lot of that stress will be taken away. And I'm also a more mature athlete than I was the last time around. So yeah, a lot of it is just trying to mitigate stress in any way that you can, controlling what you can control. And yeah, just being mentally sharp.
Regan, it's pretty incredible to see you where you're at now, coming from South Hazleton. And as you mentioned, you know, sometimes you get asked, wouldn't you have done better if you were at a big school with lots of facilities and top-notch, you know, facilities and whatnot? But here you are, and I'm really curious. We have a lot of athletes that compete, that come out of this region of British Columbia, our little northwest, you know, pocket here. If you had some advice for other athletes that are kind of in the early streams, in the minor leagues still, trying to work their way up, that may be feeling some of that, hesitancy, or feeling that they're not getting the kind of support or the facilities that they think they need to be a champion, what advice would you give them moving forward in their careers?
I would say just follow your own path. That's like a big thing even now, is you just need to focus on yourself. You can't be thinking about like what your competitors are doing or the advantages that they might have over you. All you can do is focus on yourself. So even if you're from a small town, there's advantages to that as well. Like I said, you have the support of your community. You don't have the same stresses necessarily that they have at other places. So yeah, even though it can seem like a disadvantage, there's ways to spin it into a positive. And I think as long as you focus on the positives, you'll come out on top.
Okay, Regan, we'll leave it there for now. We wish you all the best in the next couple of weeks as you get ready to head to Paris, and we'll be definitely watching and cheering for you.
Thanks a lot, Daniel.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.